Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Welcome into the playbook for a Tuesday on Patriots.com radio. I'm John Rook. Eric Scalavino has his normal Tuesday off. This is the first time now we've gone 3 weeks into the regular season. First time we've actually had a quote unquote normal week in these first 3 weeks. And normally Eric works Sunday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
Tuesdays off.
I know. I wish we could too, but no, we've got football to talk about on Tuesdays. And because the schedule is all messed up the last couple of weeks, we've been fortunate enough to have Eric on Tuesdays. But this is part of his normal day off, Mondays and Tuesdays generally. And then he will join us Wednesdays and Thursdays, provided we don't have another screwy week from here on out, which I think we probably will in more ways than one. So anyway, you got me today. And this show is about you today. It needs to be about you because, number one, I don't want to hear myself talk for 2 hours. Okay. That's not a talk show. That's just me talking. That's not a show. I'll give you what I got, but I need you to give me what you got. I need you to answer the questions to the issues that are on the table, a little participation here, whether it's an email, whether it's a tweet, whether it's a Facebook post, or you're going to do it the old fashioned way and pick up the phone and call. Very simple. It's Nitpick Tuesday, which of course, as most of you know, this is the day that we kind of turn back, look at the game on Sunday. In this case, it was actually on a Sunday. And try to find the little things that just don't set well with us. I mean, yeah, it was 23-3. Yeah, the team probably played a little better than I thought. Maybe even a little better than you thought. Yeah, we saw some improvement on the offense. Yeah, the defense was still pretty good. But wasn't there just something to it that just kind of, I don't know, gnaws at you, grabs at you, you know is not right, needs to be fixed for things to be better in the long haul. Now, I've got three general thoughts in mind as to my nitpicks. I'll share them throughout the course of the show because, as I said, this is your show. So it's time for you now to jump in and give us your nitpicks. You reach us via email, webradio@patriots.com. On the telephone, the toll-free number, 855-PATS-500. 855-PATS-500. Or the Ace Ticket Hotline at 508-298-0398. Rings into the same lines, rings into the same system. Just pick up the phone and let's get it done. Facebook. John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E is how you spell the last name. If you aren't already a friend, submit the request, and then we can do whatever you like on Facebook. Suggest ideas. Doesn't necessarily have to be while we're on during the show, but it's a great way to post things during the show especially. And, of course, Twitter handle, @JRBroadcaster. So hit me up on Twitter. Send the tweets, @JRBroadcaster is how you reach me on Twitter. Now, I'll lead off by giving you the first nitpick that I have. And I got to tell you, I'm actually a little surprised at myself. But, again, this is nitpicky, okay? A little nitpicky. I had the opportunity after the game was over. Usually after wins, home wins, we have the opportunity to go up into the clubhouse. And the clubhouse is, I can't remember if it's the west or the east one. Which one do we go up into the clubhouse and do the post-game interviews for?
I have no idea. I've never been up there.
You've never been up there for it? Okay. Anyway, as part of we started this like about three years ago after wins on home Sundays, and usually not including
some
the
late
night
party
games.
I'm not invited to, John?
No. But it just they thought this was a really good benefit, and I actually agreed with it. I thought it was a great marketing strategy, marketing move here by the team, to go up into the Putnam Clubhouse after the game and do a live interview with a player for the season ticket holders, for the fans, for the investors, for the money givers, what have you, inside the Putnam Clubhouse, which is, you know, obviously the club area, the red seats. If you've been to Gillette, then you know what I'm talking about, that second level. And so there's usually a crowd of, 50 to 100 hardcore fans that will stick around and keep from going out to the tailgate or whatever they're doing after the game is over, and they want to hear from whatever player we get to bring up. Didn't do it the opening week, first game, because it was a late-night game and everybody had to get up and work the next day for a Thursday night. Usually it's Sunday 1 o'clock games. Occasionally, depending on the opponent, they'll do it after a Sunday afternoon game. Sunday night games, probably not, just because it'll be, 1 a.m., but by the time everything gets going, and everybody's got to get up and go to work. But it's usually the afternoon games that they do this for. And this Sunday, we had a chance to talk to who, man? Michael Ho'omanawanui. By the way, I asked him if my pronunciation was good, and he said, "You're spot on, dude." And he actually did dude me.
Now that I think about it, I know why I haven't been up there.
Why is that?
I'm doing the post-game show.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. You're down here.
With Bertrand.
On the radio with Bertrand, right?
We had Brandon Bolden. We were lucky.
That's great. That's a good one. Well, we had Hooman come in, and obviously he had a huge third down catch that kept the drive alive late in the third quarter, led to a field goal that helped really kind of ice things on Sunday with the 23-3 win. And I asked him, obviously about the play. And then there were some questions from the fans, which is a good opportunity for, fans to, that are in attendance at least, to ask a question of one of the Patriots players. Sometimes, depending upon, who the marketing people can bring in, the interviews are good. Sometimes they're probably not quite as good. This time is pretty good. First of all, he's a delightful young man, very personable, good dude, just a good guy. And yes, I got duded, which is fine. Listen, at my age, if I can get a dude, I'm happy. So it was good. And then I started to go this direction. I got to be honest with you. I started to go this direction, and I held off because, no, it's a win. It's a win. It's a win. Got to remember, this team's 3-0. It's a win. It's a win. It's a win. See, this is the old Patriots playbook, Patriots.com radio mentality that's in me after having done this show now for 13 years. I'm kind of like, all right, we got to find the little nitpicks to come up with, right? No, I kept it all positive. But my one nitpick, my first nitpick that I'll share with you today, it happens to be concerning the play of the tight ends. Eric and I dealt with a little of this last week. I'll start off this week with it because I think we're all anticipating, and we won't know anything official until Saturday. Maybe not even until Sunday before, inactives are listed. But I think we're all anticipating the return of Rob Gronkowski this week. I will tell you here on Tuesday, there's just no way of knowing. The first injury report comes out tomorrow afternoon at 4 p.m. Eastern time, so I can't tell you. Wish I could, even. I'm going to surmise, though, that because he was upgraded from doubtful 2 weeks ago to questionable this past week, that it stands to reason as long as he does not have a setback in practice, when practice, resumes tomorrow, as the guys had today off, that I would assume that they'll attempt to try to bring him back. Number one, I think they realize that they've got an opportunity here. Because this is a huge three-game gauntlet. We talked about this a little last week. I gave you, in fact, a little sneak preview of this last week, and certainly we'll deal with it more a little bit later today and throughout the course of this week as we begin to focus on next Sunday night's game against Atlanta. But this would be a good week to bring it back. The nitpick I have with the tight ends, though, is that they flat out just still do not go to them enough. They targeted more. I think it was seven targets? I got to look at the target list again because I don't have it in front of me. I thought that there was at least a step in the right direction, and I realize that I probably am really nitpicking here, but they still need, if they're going to, I think part of the problem here, and I've seen a couple of different opinions from writers who I respect, and I tend to agree here. I think part of the reason that we've seen the Patriots slow to get into gear offensively is because they've had to retool everything. And we've talked about this on this program. That, once they lost Aaron Hernandez and then once they lost Rob Gronkowski, you're talking about a tight end heavy offense that went from basically depending on the tight end for a majority or for certainly an overwhelming number of targets to basically none. And so they've had to retool the offense, and they've had to retool it around largely inexperienced receivers, and that's just going to lead to some problems. And you just have to look at it like that. It's really nothing more or less, and it's taken them some time to, you know, kind of get into some kind of a groove. And I think they got closer this week. And I think we can all sort of agree that we saw, you know, some improvement, especially from the younger wide receivers this week. Not all the way there yet, but I think we saw enough progress to think that, okay, this is encouraging. But they still need to begin targeting the tight end. Because my worry here, and my real nitpick here is, and I realize this is going to be an extreme nitpick, but my real nitpick is when they bring Gronk back in and all of a sudden they start throwing to him, we're going to put way too much burden on his shoulders than he needs to take. They need to ease him back into this lineup. So if they're not going to ease him back into this lineup, shouldn't they at least be targeting the tight end position a little bit more to make sure that tight end position is a little bit more, I don't know, in sync with everybody else in offense? Seems like we're talking about being in sync, and I'm not talking about the stupid boy band here, but we're talking about in sync, being in sync more than anything else on offense this year is being a problem with this team. I don't know. I may be off base. That's the one thing that really kind of hit me, and it hit me right in the smack dab middle of doing this interview with Who Man. And I just said, no, this is not the place or the time to do that, because he did have a huge game that did lead to three critical points that helped ice the game away on Sunday. So there you go. Although I think somebody from the crowd did ask him, hey, when's Gronk coming back? That was freaking brilliant. But he gave a great answer. He said, I will not answer that question. And that's that. They, and of course, he smiled while saying it, big grin, the big Cheshire Cat grin there. But he was correct in saying, yeah, he probably, you know, he'd get in big time trouble for trying to answer that question. I think we're anticipating, you know, or at least we're thinking that Gronk could be back this next week if we're to believe the progress from the injury reports. All right, so that's my first nitpick. You know, you can rip it apart if you like. You can share your concerns if you like. You can certainly disagree with it if you like. Webradio@patriots.com on email, 855-PATS-500, the toll-free telephone number, @JRBroadcaster on Twitter, John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E, on Facebook. That's where we start. Here comes one from Jay in Rochester. Says, I guess my one small nitpick would have to be Brady making a few bad choices and missing some wide open receivers. That being said, I think he was much better later in the game, and I was glad to see that he and the younger guys seemed to have used the 10 days off to get more in sync. The defense looked very good again, and I love seeing the offense run the clock out at the end. Yeah, you notice that they kind of went into their clock-chewing offense with about 7.5 minutes to go in the game. Little earlier than normal, because that clock-chewing offense is really predicated for about between 4 and 5 minutes left on the clock, really around 4 and change. And they pretty much can run the clock out in that regard. And they did pretty well, because they still ended up chewing up about 4.5 minutes of clock time before they gave the ball back up to Tampa Bay over on downs. And the ball was deep in Tampa territory, so they really couldn't do anything with it. And they're already down 3 scores, so, you know, what were they going to do with it? The offense did what they were supposed to do in that instance. Jay says, I'm old school. I love to see the running backs eat up the clock. This is why LeGarrette Blount is worth something. He can't turn the corner for squat. And we talked about that actually to, you know, the people that were in the booth with me on Sunday, talked about that during the game. Man, he has a hard time turning the corner. You know, it's like watching grass grow. He's slow, and it just doesn't happen for him. But he can still, if you give him the ball in a situation where he can put it between the tackles, he's much better. I don't know why they would give it to him to try to go around end or around tackle. That blows me away, because he just doesn't turn it. Taking a cue from you and Eric, I must digress for a sec. As I was watching Football Night in America yesterday, I noticed something and wondering if any of the other listeners noticed before I was mistaken. As they were showing clips of a Chicago talk radio show called the Mully and Hanley Show, I heard what sounded like a familiar, silky, seductive, and football-knowing female voice. John, I hope I am wrong and hate to be the one to tell you if it's true, but I think Kat from Chicago may be talking to other radio hosts behind your back. If it was Kat, congrats to her on her national airwaves debut. If not, never mind. Did anybody else hear that? I saw the piece last night, but I had the sound down on the television. So I did not hear what it was. And, Kat, if you're listening today, do you call Mully and Hanley in Chicago? Because if you do, and you missed it last night, you apparently made your national television debut. And I'll forgive you. I will forgive you for your dalliance into someone else's talk show. Oh, that's a great observation by you, Jay. That really is. I like that. All right, 855-PATS-500, the toll-free telephone line. Ryan is in Orlando. Ryan, you're going to lead us off in the playbook today.
Yeah, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Just started listening to the show. Love it.
Thank you.
So, I guess going back to the tight end thing, just one thing that's been just kind of in the back of my head is I noticed, you know, we're not really using Sudfeld at all.
Right.
And he had some real flashes of brilliance in the preseason, which is just preseason, obviously. But, I mean, he can catch the ball. And I kind of think that once Gronk comes back, they're going to go right into that double tight end set again and just kind of maybe take everybody by surprise. But I feel like I'm one of those Patriots fans that I really, really want the Patriots to be patient with Gronk coming back, because every year in the playoffs, he's like an X factor for us and he's never there.
Yeah.
So I feel like just taking the time would be a really big deal.
Yeah, I think you touched on a couple of pretty good things. Number one, let me hit on Sudfeld. What we saw of Zach Sudfeld in the preseason, I'll admit, I think was kind of fool's gold. First of all, you gotta realize that it's against vanilla defense. Largely, it came against other teams' rookies and or free agents and or younger players.
Right.
And so I think that, you know, we're all lulled into a false sense of security of, oh, wow, this guy can play, when he actually does have some trouble hanging onto the football. And we know how the Patriots treat players who can't hang onto the football. They see a lot of pine time. Just ask Stephen Ridley about that. Stephen Ridley needs to, you know, share, I think, paychecks perhaps over the next 8 weeks with, you know, his running mates in the backfield. So, just, you know, as an aside, I think they still like Sudfeld. I think he's got great size as he continues to fill out and learn the pro game. And again, let's realize he's a free agent. All right. So he's a rookie undrafted free agent. So kind of like a Kenbrell Tompkins, if you can get this out, you get anything out of him, it's great. It's fantastic value. And I wouldn't be at all surprised to see him enter into blocking at the very least first, until he can figure out what he has to do on some of the passing routes and learn to hold on to the football. Because the two passes that stand out in my mind are one of the preseason and one of the regular season that he got his hands on both times, he couldn't hold and they were intercepted. So because of that, I'm sure there is an emphasis on him holding on to the ball. And I'm sure that's part of the reason why you have not seen him as much. And I think that there was a sense of urgency, especially after the Jets game, in trying to get the tight ends back involved in the offense in order to sort of ramp up, if you will, for when Rob Gronkowski does come back. And I thought, Hooman actually did a pretty good job of blocking this week. In fact, I thought his blocking was extraordinary. The fact that he caught a catch and was second effort, almost picked up a first down on 3rd and 19, was just a real effort play. And I know that scored really, really highly with the coaching staff and his teammates. And obviously it should score highly with fans, because that put them in position, you know, for Gostkowski to hit another field goal. So, that's all win-win. But I think Hooman's got himself a good solid spot here. I think Sudfeld, they'd like for him to stick around and keep that. As for everything else, I think it's wide open. And, you know, the kid from Maine, Mulligan, he had 2-3 snaps, didn't really get much of an opportunity, on Sunday. But again, they're putting him in there because they need to utilize the tight end. So I'm hopeful that this was just a precursor of things to come, that they're kind of ramping up. But I'd still like to see them target more, because Hooman can catch the ball. And he obviously can do something with it after he catches it. That's why they brought him. Remember, he played under Josh McDaniels when McDaniels was in St. Louis. And the guy can play. And clearly Josh said, you know, he was worth it, you know, enough of a chance to bring him in a year ago simply because of working with him in St. Louis. So they brought him in. And, you know, if you're going to bring a guy in, let's see what he can do.
I wish he'd get the ball more, honestly. Maybe 30 yards?
Yeah, that's Ryan, that's really the crux of my nitpick. I'd love to see him get the ball more. Let's see what the guy can do. He can definitely block. He's definitely versatile. He can line up in the backfield. He is what we saw from Aaron Hernandez. He can do that. He's just not quite as flashy. He's not quite as fast. He didn't even have the overall size as Hernandez, but he's the guy. So let's plug him in there and see how much he can really do. And I don't think they've done that yet. And so therefore, that's one of my nitpicks.
Gotcha. And I didn't know if I could have a second question here.
Absolutely. You go ahead.
Just wanted to get your thoughts on the offensive line. I know normally just running our offense with Brady, usually they're a powerhouse. You know, like they're really good at blocking for him. And this year they kind of look a little bit shaky. I'm really stoked about Marcus Cannon, though. I love how versatile he is. He can play tackle. He can play guard. But, got that foot injury to Vollmer. I don't think we know how serious that is. But, you know, it looks a little bit shaky. And the defenses this year, you know, some of the front sevens are pretty tenacious. So, and we all know what happens with Brady once he gets kind of rattled up a little bit. So just kind of want to get your thoughts about that.
On the offensive line?
Yes, sir.
Well, first of all, I'm glad that there's versatility. Because when we saw Vollmer went down for the second half and was out in the second half of the game, you know, I thought that Marcus Cannon came in and they didn't miss a beat. In fact, you could certainly make an argument that they might have actually been a little bit better because Cannon does excel at run blocking. And that drive in the fourth quarter, the clock-chewing drive, was in there with Cannon doing his load at right tackle. So I'm glad that they have the versatility. I'll put it to you that way. I don't really think they miss a lot with Cannon in there. Certainly pass blocking is something that he has to work on, but that's not what they were really needing. It'll be interesting to see what Vollmer comes in under the injury report when the first one comes out tomorrow. You hope that it's nothing huge. You hope that a guy like Svitek, who, frankly, when they picked him up, I thought that was a huge offseason move for the Patriots in terms of the versatility. And we all know, and we've said it many times on this show, and you've read it many times as well, that's the one thing that really sets the Patriots line apart from many others around the league, is that every guy on that offensive line can play another position. That's why Dan Copen was expendable a couple of years ago at center, even though he was a Pro Bowl caliber type of player, and it was a mainstay, but he didn't play any other position other than center, and it ultimately cost him his job. So everybody on that line's got to do a little something other than the job they're intended or they were brought in to do. Svitek is one of those guys that's right there and does that, and even though he's been hurt, if he comes back into the fold, the offensive line is going to be in great shape. It'll be one of the areas of non-concern for this team. But now I'm a little concerned over the fact that they seem to be getting a little thinner in terms of their overall health and their depth there. So, but it's as far as talent is concerned, as far as their ability, I don't really have any problems right now. I think we've seen that this team loves to run block. They've gone over 150 yards rushing now in two of the three games that they've played. So I think that's a pretty solid standard in the NFL. It would put them certainly in the top, probably 7 to 8, I would think, in terms of rushing teams in the league, which I think is where you really want to be if you want to have a run game that is truly respected. And if you really want to have a respected play action ability as well on offense. So they're headed the right direction. They're headed the right direction. And the offensive line is certainly a part of that.
Cool.
Okay.
All right, man.
Thanks, Ryan, for the phone call.
Problem.
Do it anytime. Appreciate that. Before we get a break in here, let's go to Kevin in Munich. Kevin, how are we doing today?
Good. How are you doing?
Excellent, Kevin.
So in that game, there's not pretty much to nitpick about in my mind because, I mean, we had the Buccaneers to 3 points. The rookie receivers made some huge plays, let alone the first touchdown from Tompkins.
Mm-hmm.
But I still think there's some improvement, especially on the tight end position, to do to get them more involved in the game.
Okay. Yeah, to get more involved in the game. Right. So you couldn't find anything at all that you in your estimation that really could use a little bit of oomph, a little bit of improvement.
Not that much. I mean, Brady was not that sharp at the beginning of the game, but he picked it up at the end. The rookie receivers made some good catches. I mean, some Dobson made some juggle catches or drop one pass, mm-hmm. I think. That wasn't that good, but overall, I was impressed by how much improved they look. If you look at the Jets game 10 days ago and now at that game.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they made some strides. You saw it on the field, and it's not that bad overall.
Not that bad. Not
for Atlanta this week.
Not that bad, but see, I'm sensing, Kevin, that you've got something else to add in there because it's not that bad. Unless it was a perfect performance, there's always room for some improvement. So I'm gonna nail you here on this one. There's got to be a spot where you think they could use some improvement.
Yeah, like I said, the Titans and also the one incompletion to Dobson in the end zone.
Yep.
That was pretty much the only thing, but far from that, the rookie receivers played a pretty good game, in my mind.
Yeah, but you think the tight ends could also use some improvement too? Now, is that a byproduct of the tight ends, or is that a byproduct of the offense not targeting those tight ends?
I don't have the numbers right now, but I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, they're missing Gronk, obviously, but I think Brady could target Sustard or Human a little bit more. I mean, how much throws there were to the tight end in that game? 3 or 4? I think you could at least thrown 8 times to the tight end
mm-hmm.
for some short routes or maybe some seams.
Okay. Fair enough. All right. Sounds good. What else is on your mind today, Kevin?
Not that much. I'm just looking forward for the Atlanta game because I think after what Miami did to them, we got a pretty good chance to go into Atlanta and go 4-0 this weekend.
Well, I would say that that'll be a considerable challenge, and obviously we'll deal with more of that as we progress this week. But and thanks for the phone call, Kev. We'll talk to you, I'm sure, soon. But the fact is that I alluded to it just a short while ago that this week is going to start a significant 3-game, and there's really no other way to put it except gauntlet. It's a gauntlet. You're going to be at Atlanta, you're at Cincinnati, and then back home against New Orleans. You're going to play a powerhouse offense in Atlanta that's struggling themselves defensively, which we'll talk more about. Then you're going to go on the road and take on a Cincinnati team that's got all the talent in the world on both sides of the ball, and they should be an AFC contender this year. And they're going to play on their home field, but they're very explosive and they're very, very talented defensively. And then you're going to get one of the most prolific quarterbacks of modern day football coming in here with a New Orleans team that's got its head coach back this year. And, it's a team that's capable of popping anybody at any time from a relatively deep NFC in the New Orleans Saints. And who in the world doesn't think that the Saints couldn't win here in Foxborough? Of course they can. And won't it be fitting that if Tom can throw a couple of touchdowns, one this week and one the following week against Cincinnati, that he could tie Drew Brees' consecutive week touchdown record against Drew Brees and the Saints? If he could throw one that day, then it'll be 54 straight weeks if he gets that far. He's at 51 consecutive weeks right now. We're going to get into some of the superlatives that you may have missed as a result of the 23-3 win over Tampa on Sunday. Got another question that I want to put out for you as well. But I keep hearing, too many people say they should never have given up on Wes Welker. I understand the sentiment. Believe me, it's just not easy for a lot of people to just turn around and give up on maybe, arguably, the best wide receiver in franchise history. And I can understand why some people would think that about Wes Welker, because the numbers speak for themselves, with all due respect to, guys who have come along, Stanley Morgan, Randy Fataha, Irving Fryer. There have been some great ones that have come through the years here. So I'm going to ask you right now. I want you to make a choice. Tell me why you're making the choice. But if all things were equal right now, are you a Welker guy or are you an Amendola guy? Which camp are you in? Let's decide this once and for all so we can kind of put this issue behind us. Because I heard this on local talk radio here earlier today, and I'm like, why are we still having this conversation? Wes Welker's gone. And I know it came up because they saw him last night. Denver looks like an absolutely unstoppable machine on offense. But can we please remember this is just 3 weeks into the season? Super Bowls don't get won in week three. Now, I know this is going to build up to the November game here in Foxborough that Denver must come and play. We got a lot of football to be played. Dare I say 2 months worth of football to play before Denver enters the picture here. So I think it's time for us to begin moving along. But that being said, if you had an equal choice, you could take one or the other. No offense to the one you don't take. But which one do you like and why? Wes Welker or Danny Amendola? 855-PATS-500 is the phone number. 508-298-0398, the Ace Ticket Hotline. Web radio at patriots.com, the email. At JR Broadcaster, Twitter. John.Rook on Facebook. All right, I'm going to get a break in here. And then Big Al's going to perform his mea culpa coming up inside the playbook.
The word offseason doesn't exist in the NFL. Maybe for hot dog vendors and groundskeepers, but not for teams or players or fans. When the goal every year is winning it all, the road begins to be paved in February. Because there are holes that need to be filled, weights that need to be lifted, and next levels that need to be reached. Keep up with your favorite team with coverage of NFL Network 24/7 on NFL Mobile. Always having your passions with you? That's powerful. Call *NFL to download NFL Mobile from Verizon. Airtime and messaging rates may apply. Coverage not available everywhere. Available on select smartphones. Don't call or text while driving.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Miami. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or across the street from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. Ace Ticket is Boston's own ticket agency. We've been serving our customers for over 30 years. Ace always has the best seats at the lowest prices. Whether it's sports, concert, or theater tickets, Ace makes it easy to get the tickets you want and the service you deserve. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS and get the lowest price on the best tickets for all Boston sports teams. And with our free loyalty program, you get 5% back on all orders. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. Ace Ticket. Sit your ace down.
1-800-MY-SEATS. Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time, 2% cash back on groceries, and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
You know that celebration dance? The I just got a heck of a deal on awesome entertainment, so let's dance. You probably haven't done it in a while, so here's a reason to. Now until September 3rd, when you sign up for 100% fiber optic Verizon Fios, you can take your entertainment to the next level with America's fastest, most reliable internet. Switch to a Fios Triple Play Online for just $79.99 a month for 12 months and get your choice of a $300 Amazon.com gift card or a $300 Visa prepaid card with a 2-year agreement. Plus, get a high-speed wireless router at no additional charge. You won't get that with cable. And that's an entertainment deal worth dancing about. So hurry. This great summer deal ends September 3rd. Visit gottogetfios.com and upgrade today. Technology that makes life more entertaining. That's powerful. Price is $89.99 a month for months 13 to 24. Rate may increase after 2 years. Verizon Visa prepaid card issued by MetaBank, member FDIC. Amazon.com is not a sponsor of this promotion. Restrictions apply. Fios available in select areas. Offer for new customers subscribing to a triple play bundle online with a 2-year agreement and ends 9/3/13. Taxes, fees, RSN fee, and other terms apply. Visit Verizon.com/Amazon for details.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected. The Patriots Pro Shop has everything you need to show your pride on game day and every day. Choose from the widest selection of hats, tees, authentic jerseys, autographed memorabilia, and much more, including our new game-worn gear collection, where you can own a piece of authentic Patriots history. The Patriots Pro Shop, located next to Gillette Stadium, is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., or shop online 24/7 at PatriotsProShop.com. The Patriots Pro Shop, your team, your store.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Miami. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or across the street from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. Ace Ticket is Boston's own ticket agency. We've been serving our customers for over 30 years. Ace always has the best seats at the lowest prices. Whether it's sports, concert, or theater tickets, Ace makes it easy to get the tickets you want and the service you deserve. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS and get the lowest price on the best tickets for all Boston sports teams. And with our free loyalty program, you get 5% back on all orders. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. Ace Ticket. Sit your ace down.
1-800-MY-SEATS. Have a nitpick about this week's game?
Yeah, I was at the game.
Well, John does too.
Sucky, sucky, sucky.
It's Nitpick Tuesday on Patriots Playbook with John Rook on Patriots.com Radio.
Well, it's not a nitpick, but I did mention that I would also bring in some superlatives from this week in case you didn't know. Team has now allowed the fewest points through three games the start of an NFL season since 1979. Okay, that's pretty significant, kids. By my count, that's 34 years if my math is correct. 34 points, in fact, is what they've allowed through three games. And the defense has actually allowed only 27 points because we know seven came on a fumble return against Buffalo. But the 34 total points allowed by the team, fewest for the team through three games since 1979 when New England started the season by allowing 33 in the first three games to Pittsburgh, the Jets, and Cincinnati. The 34 actually are the second fewest in team history in the first three games, trailing only that 1979 team. Pretty interesting, I thought. That's why we try to wow you and amaze you inside the Patriots playbook. Twitter, at JR Broadcaster. A couple of nitpicks here. Michael says, my nitpick is the start of the game. Way too many three and outs. Hoptimistic about our chances at Atlanta. I like that. That's pretty good. Did you just come up with that, Michael? I don't think I've ever seen anybody put hope and optimistic together. But that's pretty good, especially in this day and age of 144-character tweets. I like hoptimistic. All right, there you go. And then Marco says, my two nitpicks, TB12's accuracy and the missing up-tempo game plan. Meanwhile, the defense, it's making progress. Totally agree. I'll deal with TB12 coming up in just a couple of moments. And then Marco says, I like Amendola. Plus, it's what we have, and we have to be supportive. Let's hope he gets back soon and move on. The question I had was, of course, in a perfect world, are you a Welker guy or are you an Amendola guy? Why? And Marco answered, it's what we have. We have to be supportive. Let's hope he gets back and move on. So that's what I want you to react to as well as your nitpicks today here inside the playbook. All right, let's get back to the phones. Our good friend Big Al in Valdosta, Georgia. Any tail between the legs today, Big Al?
I'm confused, John. What exactly am I supposed to be mea culpaing about?
I think the fact that you went on last week and you went on and on about Tim Tebow and his ability to perform in the red zone. And this team, yes, it's still struggling in the red zone, which is another one of my nitpicks for today. But the fact of the matter is that you kind of got hammered for it, Al. I got a lot of tweets and a lot of emails after your phone call last week about trying to make a case for Tebow. So
well, I hope those people watch the game on Sunday. You know, Tom Brady threw one interception. Do you recall the down and distance, what the down and distance had been immediately prior to that interception on Sunday?
No, but I'm sure you'll tell me.
I think it was like second and goal or third
goal.
Was
it second?
It was a first and goal inside the 10.
Okay.
Okay. That's what it was, and he got picked off.
Could it have been the play call, though, Al?
I don't know. I'm looking at the game.
Okay.
You'll have to. You're closer to these people than I am, John. I'm looking at the game.
Well, sometimes.
And
sometimes
it was a first and goal inside the 10.
Yeah.
So you can keep all your tweets, okay? It was a first and goal inside the 10. Tom Brady struggles and continues to struggle on first and goal inside the 10. So I am not mea culpa-ing about anything.
Okay.
All right.
Fair enough.
And this team would be a better football team with Tim Tebow running the offense on first and goal inside the 10. I'm not talking about from the 10 to the 20. Tom Brady is a world beater from the 10 to the 20, which skews upward his red zone statistics.
All right. Before we go any further, you've made your point about Tim, all right?
All right.
But the fact of the matter is that he's not on
you
this
asked
team.
It. You asked the question.
I did. But I'm going to...
I didn't bring this up.
No, you didn't.
You brought it up, so you deal with
Al,
it.
Al, hang on a second now, all right? This has got to be a two-way street, okay?
Go for it.
All right, good. I brought it up because of the way you left it last week, and you got hammered for it sufficiently, and that's fine.
Good.
And it's okay.
Good. I don't mind getting hammered.
That's good, and I'm glad you're here today to sort of back that up. That's fine. But the fact of the matter is he's not on the team, and the reason he's not on the team is because he's a one-dimensional guy.
Okay.
And you know that goes right up against everything that the Patriots insist all of their players being, and that's multidimensional. There's two players on this team that they do not require multi-dimensional play from. And I said this last week, and you probably know who those two guys are. One is Brady. The other's Will Fork. Everybody else, you'd better be able to play another spot or you don't make the roster.
Well, you know, I think that's a great concept, and I'm not arguing with that. I think like a lot of good things, it can be overdone. I think it can. And, you know, I hearken back to, you know, when Richard Seymour was defensive captain, and, you know, we had won three Super Bowls with Richard Seymour, and we won three Super Bowls with a fullback. Then all of a sudden we got a wild hair. Well, we don't really need a fullback anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We can have Richard Seymour do the goal line and short yardage blocking and play the fullback position.
Mm-hmm.
And we can squeeze a couple more nickels out of Richard Seymour. Mm-hmm. Okay, fine. Except when he gets rolled in the end zone and blows his knee out because somebody rolls him from behind, and then you're missing him from two-thirds of the season, and then he's never really the same ever since. That's when I think you can overdo the whole Patriot way of non-specialization. You know, I read a book once. It's a beautiful book. I recommend it to anybody.
Only once?
Well, I don't read much. I just learned how
sorry,
to read.
Sorry, you left yourself.
I'm just kidding.
You left yourself wide open, sorry.
I read this book. Go for it.
All right.
I can dish it out. I can take it, Joe.
Okay, I'm just checking.
It's okay. Here's the deal. There's a book called That First Season. It's about Vince Lombardi's first year coaching the Packers. A lot of books about Lombardi. This is an interesting one because it's about the 1959 season when they went 8-6. It's not about a championship year or any of the, you know, it's kind of like a, you know, a below the radar type of subject, I guess you might say.
Mm-hmm.
And fascinating read. I can't remember the author, but it's just a fascinating book about his first year coaching the Packers. And there were only 12 teams, of course, playing pro football back then. This is before Lamar Hunt and the AFL and before expansion. You know, there were only 12 teams in the league. And they had like a 36 or 38-man roster back then.
Yeah.
You know. Vince Lombardi kept three quarterbacks on that team.
Probably, you know, because they could do multiple things.
Very unusual to keep three quarterbacks.
Wasn't that still during the day in the NFL when there was a lot of two-way playing?
Well, there may have been.
Well, that's why you're going to keep those guys.
Because
they can do other things.
The quarterback was a backup. The third quarterback might have been a backup for something else. But the third quarterback that they kept, nobody kept three. And not a lot of teams even kept two. They might have had a guy on the cab squad. But he kept three. And the third one that he kept, ironically, was a fellow by the name of Joe Francis, who would be the Tim Tebow of his day. And ironically, I think he was the uncle of Russ Francis, who later played for the Patriots.
Mm.
But Joe Francis was from Hawaii, terrific athlete, never a threat to be a quarterback, only played a couple of years. But he helped them win two football games that year. He helped them win two football games that year. And they finished 8-6. And I think he was out of the league the next year. Yeah. No big deal. But I'm just saying, on a 38-man roster, 36, whatever it was, Vince Lombardi was willing to keep a specialist quarterback.
Okay.
And now on a 53-man roster,
but you're still talking
we're
about a day and age.
We can't keep a specialist quarterback. We've only keeping two.
You're comparing
a third guy to do one thing.
But you're comparing comparing eras that really have no basis in comparison. Okay.
Well, okay.
Al, they don't. I mean, players are way bigger, stronger, faster now than they were 50 years ago.
Well, that's true enough.
Okay. All right, what about a nitpick for this week then? Because I know you got one.
Well, the nitpick was Tom Brady getting picked off inside the 10-yard line.
Okay, fair enough. And that's certainly one of mine too. I thought that Brady.
I'm not backing off that point. I'm sorry. I think we would be a better football team. He's going to get picked off inside the 10-yard line again. He's going to get sacked inside the 10-yard line. It's going to happen all year because it's happened for 10 years. And nobody thinks about it because they think, look at his red zone statistics.
You did see, however, that he picked up a first down, you know, on a quarterback sneak again, right? And and he got 4 yards, I think, on the carry.
And I don't
right?
want him to keep getting hit on quarterback sneaks at his age.
Okay.
I'm glad he still can do it, and he's willing to do it, and everything else. But here I am, I'm trying to look out for the young man. You know, you're saying that I'm ripping him all the time. Here, I'm trying to pick him up. I'm trying to defend him. Tom, I don't want you to get hurt on these quarterback sneaks. We got this guy built like a Sherman tank.
All right, you know what? Okay, all right.
He could have done it.
All right, I'll play devil's advocate with you here just for the sake of argument. All right, so you put Tebow in that situation, okay? Doesn't the defense know what the hell's coming? And how does that help the Patriots?
I don't think they know.
What are you talking about? They won't know.
You're bringing him in
for what reason?
Well, I don't know that you'd bring him in at that. I'm not saying that you bring him in at midfield to run a quarterback sneak to set up the field goal kicker like we did Sunday. Maybe you don't bring in Tebow in that situation.
Well, if you're not going to bring him in that situation, why the hell is he on the team?
For first and goal inside the 10. I don't know. Maybe I'm not being clear enough.
How many times do you
clear enough?
How many
Hello?
Times?
Radio Land. Am I being
Big
clear
Al,
enough?
Al, how many times
I've
during the course of a game?
Inside the 10 how about many 3,000 times?
Al, how many times during the course of the game do you actually find yourself with first and goal inside the 10?
Quite a bit. I think we had two or three Sunday.
Okay. Two or three times a game. So even if that's generous,
that's points,
two
John.
Or three
that's
times.
Points on the field.
But two or three times out of how many plays are run?
I don't know. I don't care.
Come on,
they're not as
Al,
important as first
Al,
and goal inside the 10.
Al, come on.
First and goal inside the 10.
You're
going to
bring a guy
play.
Under the roster for two or three plays out of 70 or
no
80
matter
plays.
How important those plays are.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Well, all right.
We'll,
all right,
we'll have to agree to disagree here, buddy.
If you don't agree with it, it's a free country we're running here.
It all is?
Right? So you don't have to agree with it. But I'm not backing off my point.
All right.
And my point was proven
I never said, I never,
on Sunday.
No, it's no, there's no proof. What proof is that?
Well, it was supported.
Who's going to be in the Hall of Al, then my argument of who's going to be in the Hall of Fame when all is said and done is also viable in that instance.
Well, I don't disagree with that. Tom Brady's a first ballot unanimous Hall of Fame quarterback.
Then why are you taking him off the field?
First and goal inside the 10.
Why are you taking him off the field? You're telling me you're going to replace a guy that's a first ballot Hall of Famer with a guy who can't complete 50% of his passes?
Because he's a better quarterback on first and goal inside the 10.
Come on, Al. Come on,
Al. He did it in Florida when he was a freshman.
Are you the president of the Tim Tebow fan club?
I am the president of the Tim Tebow fan club when it's first and goal inside the 10. That's when I'm the president of his fan club.
All right, okay.
The other 90 yards of the field, I hope the guy. I wish the guy well. But you know what? Maybe he's not that good. But I know on first and goal inside the 10, he's better than what we got.
Oh, okay. All right.
And it was supported, not proven, it was supported on Sunday with another interception by Tom Brady after a first and goal.
So,
inside the 10.
So every time Tom throws a pick on a first and goal inside the 10 this year, which may not happen again this year,
you
but
can replay,
just for argument's
call
sake,
in and do the nitpick.
Just for argument's sake, the next time that happens, but you'll promise me that you'll call in and you'll nitpick on that, okay?
I'd be happy to.
I'm sure you will.
All right, now look, beyond that, I love the defense. I'm tired of bitching about Brady. I love the defense. You know, and everything you've said about the defense is great. I agree with it 10,000%. The defense is a work in progress, but things seem to be working, and we seem to be making progress. So I'm happy with the defense. I really am, and I think it's only going to get better. The difference that I see is that in the past, we would depend on turnovers to get off the field. We'd get turnovers, and that's great, but we needed them to get off the field. Now we still get turnovers, which is also great, but we don't seem to need them as much to get off the field. We're getting off the field on third down and whatever it is.
That is an excellent point by you, and I think that is a difference maker. It's also a huge step in the right direction for this team.
Absolutely.
Defensively. And Al, I'm gonna move on so I can get a couple of other callers in here. And you know that you are welcome to call back anytime. I love going back and forth with you. And you stick to your guns if that's what you need to do. Stick to your guns. But I hope that you know if things do turn out and this offense does pick it up and, you know, Tom doesn't throw another pick inside the 10 on a first and goal, that you will still call in and you will still say, geez, I guess my boy, you know, Tom has finally figured out a way to improve. I don't know. Maybe it has something to do with the fact that he doesn't really have a tight end he can throw to. Maybe it has a little something to do with the fact that he's got relative inexperience with the rookie. The rookie wide receivers that are out there. Where's the Wookiee? You don't have a Wookiee.
All I have is Chewbacca.
Oh, Chewbacca. Thank you. The rookie wide receivers. I think that has to, yeah, there you go. Every time we say rookie wide receiver, we have to play Chewbacca now. I think that's got to be part of it. Try to figure that one out, if you will. The fact is that he's struggling inside the 10 simply because he doesn't know who he's targeting. He doesn't have targets. All right, Steve and Colleen, please save me here.
Hey, John. Always good to hear from Big Al.
You know what? I love Al. Al is one of the most knowledgeable guys that we have had, and he's been a part of this show for a number of years. He's a dedicated Patriots fan down in Georgia, but God love him. He's just got, you know, honestly, you know, I don't know. Maybe his daughter's dating Tim. I really don't
know.
The man
has dug his heels in.
But, yeah, he's definitely dug his heels in on this one.
But, hey, you know, I respect him for sticking to his guns. Whether or not I agree with him or not is irrelevant at this point.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
My Nick, first of all, I'm happy that they found some of the nasty sauce I was talking about the last time we spoke, John, as far as just in general stepping it up across the board and kind of getting some swagger. My Nick is kind of an odd one. Tackling.
Yeah.
I'm watching, and it's second, third, fourth, sometimes even tip effort to actually secure whoever has the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's not taking anything away from the talent that we've been up against. I mean, there's been some strong backs and, you know, large receivers that, you know, looking at Atlanta, that's kind of my concern with as good as Talib is, he's going up against a guy that definitely has some eyes on him. And, I know he's going to need help over the top, which is going to, you know, open up other opportunities, I think, for Atlanta and their passing game if we can't get any pressure on their quarterback. So, you know, that's my concern looking ahead as far as Atlanta's concerned.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Amendola versus Welker.
Yeah.
I got to go with Amendola, and it's based on just based on this, we know that Welker is durable, but Amendola proved that he's tough. So I'm hoping that, you know, the health concern and issues get addressed and he can be back. And hopefully we can get past not only being, you know, tough, but durable with him eventually, given the fact that, you know, nobody wants to say that he's prone to injury or injury prone.
Yeah.
But it just seems to kind of be that black cloud that hangs over the guy. But
well, it's a legitimate cloud that hangs over him because you know, we don't have anything else to go by. I mean, the fact of the matter is that the guy's hurt all the time. So he's got to figure out a way to, you know, and I mentioned this in a column I wrote about a week ago. The one thing that I really think that we all would like to see from Danny Amendola is his ability to stay on the field. There's a difference between playing hurt and playing injured.
Right.
And he's been injured, and I think we realize that, but he would not have practiced last week if he was injured. He's hurt. And I think there's a definite distinction between the two. In fact, gentleman that we're going to speak to here in just a couple of moments, Field Yates, who covers the Patriots for ESPNBoston.com, he's even gone on the website and said as much that he's improving. And it looks like, you know, he could be back sooner than we originally thought. So if that's the case, then he's got to learn to fight through some of these issues that are apparently nagging him. And you know, and if he can do that, then I'm solely and 110% completely in his corner for all of the reasons that the Patriots allegedly made the move to get him. Number one, it was just that's where they value the position of slot receiver. Number two, 5 years younger. That's that, to me, that's the biggest difference between the two. But saving those two, I got to admit, I'm a Welker guy. And I think Wes Welker, you know, it still will be considered one of the all-time receivers in Patriots history, and he should be because the numbers will back him up. Whether or not you think the offenses have changed to the point where anybody was in that position could grab that kind of, you know, that number is subject to conjecture. But all things being equal, I kind of right now would still rather go with the production that I know I can get as opposed to the production I hope I can get. Does that make sense?
Makes perfect sense, John. And, you know, I'm going off of, again, you know, I like the fact that the guy showed toughness through playing through the injury.
Yeah. Yes.
And,
yeah.
And you know, I like that attitude. So, you know, Welker, we didn't have to deal with that. So I never saw it.
Yes.
And so my you know, that might be a little unfair to Wes, but even so, I'm going with hopefully youth and long-term durability. My other guy that's a bit of a frustration has been Zach Sudfeld. I know, you know, the potential that he has. We saw it in the preseason. And, again, it goes back to your original nit of, you know, we're not targeting the tight end.
Yep.
But it also goes to the fact that, you know, the guy's been dropping balls, too. So.
Oh, you talking about Sudfeld?
Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong. He hasn't had a catch in three games. Of course, he hasn't had the opportunity because he hasn't been targeted, too. So, you know, I realize that's a two-edged sword.
But. Yeah. Well, as far as this team's concerned, you got to do it in practice. If you can't do it in practice, they don't even give you a chance to do it in a game.
Right. I mean, you know, like Lombardi said, practice doesn't make perfect. Perfect practice makes perfect.
Yes, that's it's 110% right. That's 110% right. And this team embodies that thought process, absolutely, without question.
But I like, again, like I said, from pretty much first game till now, I like the maturation that's happening, John. I'm hoping that we come out against Atlanta and we are just as physical as we can be. So, you know, basically establishing our will from the first, actually before the first whistle even blows, just coming out.
Right.
As Ray Lewis said, like angry dogs.
Right. That's 110% correct. And they're going to need to be, Steve. Thank you for the phone call. All right, I'm going to get back to the phone calls and the cards and letters as they're coming in here. And guess what, Big Al? You stirred a hornet's nest again today. So I'm going to get to those in a moment. But dropping by the studio is Field Yates from ESPN Boston, who covers the Patriots for the website. And, you know, part of the conversation, Field, has to do with, in addition to finding nitpicky things, and which is usually harder to do after you win a game 23-3, but I pointed out the question, you know, all things being equal, if you could have, in a perfect situation, who would you select, Welker or Amendola? And Patriots fans seem to be going with Danny Amendola. I think they're beginning to kind of turn the page, even though Wes Welker is obviously part of a prolific offense that I think could very well challenge the 07 Patriots for the NFL scoring record just based on what we've seen through 3 weeks. What are your thoughts?
I think you could make a list that probably goes 5 or 6 items deep for each player that's pretty convincing as to why it makes more sense to have one versus the other. Welker, it's fairly obvious. He's consistent. He is there every single Sunday or Monday or Wednesday as we've seen him play so far with the Denver Broncos. You know what you're going to get out of him. He's going to catch. You know, he's going to catch his 6 to 8 or 10 balls as he's done per game in Denver. I think you know he's going to be there as a run blocker. You know, he's going to have some drops. He has maybe a smaller catch radius than some other receivers in the league. But you know that he is as dependable as it comes at the wide receiver position. Whereas Amendola, I mean, same thing. After week one, who was doubting the Patriots' decision to sign Danny Amendola? He was the best player on the field in the fourth quarter and a critical come from behind victory. He's got as good, if not probably better, quickness than Welker, a little bit more downfield speed. He can catch everything thrown his way. The elephant in the room, and we've been discussing it all afternoon, is the fact that can he stay on the field? And you don't know that. So far, he's missed 2 out of 3 games. So I think from that standpoint, you might say to yourself, well, I'd rather have 31 or 32-year-old Wes Welker than I would 27-year-old Amendola right now.
Isn't the devil you know always better than the devil you don't?
Yes, but as we know also, in the NFL, things don't always work out as planned. Even if two sides want to get something done, it doesn't always happen. Because I think that we all know by the time that Wes Welker left New England, he wanted to come back to the Patriots. And the Patriots wanted to have him. They just had to find that point somewhere in the middle where it made perfect sense for both sides. And when these negotiations get to the open market, anything can happen.
Certainly does, and it did. And I'm not trying really to dig up something that's already a dead subject, but I thought in light of what we saw offensively from Denver last night and the fact, you know, that we're hoping that, you know, we can get some positive, news on, you know, Amendola, if not Gronkowski, for this week, you know, going into obviously a huge gauntlet that they're getting ready to run over the next 3 weeks here, that would certainly help the offense out.
Sure would.
We did see strides made, I thought, on Sunday, without a doubt. I think, you know, there was less confusion, it seemed to be, between, you know, the rookie receivers, or the Wookiees, as I like to call them. And it's only because I can't stumble. I keep stumbling over my own mouth here, so we're just going to call them Wookiees for short now.
The Wookiees.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Kevin. So,
does that make you John Wook by...
Oh, thank you.
Translation?
That's good. Nice.
Yeah.
Nicely done.
I'm paid by the joke here.
Well, he gets his paycheck for the day then.
All right.
All right, so here we go. We've seen progress, but they're not there yet.
They may not be there yet, but we've seen progress. Yep. And I think what Sunday showed us is that the Patriots are just a few plays away from getting back to that scoring clip they were at last year, where they were at, you know, 31 or 32 points per game. Mm-hmm. What's encouraging to me is that they're getting to the red zone, because offense between the 20 and the 20 can often be difficult, but really the biggest challenge when you get inside the 20, the field is narrowed, you have less room to operate, and how effective can you be in your red area opportunities? The Patriots still haven't figured out that part of the equation yet. I think they're maybe 4 for 14 on the season in the red zone, maybe 4 for 11. I mean, it's not great and not nearly the clip they were at last year, but I think that some of the issues that were sort of bothering them in week 2, just getting to the red zone, were at least alleviated in part in week 3. And the big thing here is that, you know, it could be this Sunday night. It's probably more realistically another week from there that the Patriots might have their two best receiving options back on the field. You know, I think Gronkowski has a decent shot to play this Sunday night in Atlanta. That would be quite the fitting comeback for Gronkowski from all the surgeries he's been through. But then Amendola, I don't think week 4 is quite a reasonable estimate for him, but maybe week 5 or week 6. But, you know, the reinforcements of a magnificent variety are soon to return to the Patriots offense, and that makes this red zone offense entirely different and far more dynamic. You know, Gronkowski, that's where he's at his best. I mean, he's great. He's exceptional, you know, everywhere on the field. But in the red zone, you just can't find a way to cover him because he's too big and too strong to take on, you know, for a cornerback or a safety to play against him. And he's too athletic for a linebacker to try to cover him one-on-one. So I think when he does return, which could be as soon as this Sunday, Patriots red zone offense will be in for a very good treat.
That was my second nitpick, was red zone offense, and the fact that, you know, quite frankly, it's inadequate at this point in time.
Yeah, but that's not a nitpick. That's fair.
But, it, you know, I think it's a fair assessment. And, but you also pointed out, once Gronk does return to the lineup, we expect those numbers to improve. The third nitpick that I had today, and I've shared two already here as we're in hour number two of the program today, but the third one kind of ties in with number two. And the fact is that Tom Brady, I thought, had just problems connecting. And we saw a little of it last year. And some of that might have been due to, you know, there was an alleged elbow problem. Maybe there was a little bit of a shoulder problem. There was a little something going on with the foot, I think, last year. Or, you know, and of course, now he had the knee thing happen during preseason this year. And yeah, he's starting to show some of those signs, I think, of being a 36-year-old NFL quarterback that has been reasonably protected. But fact of the matter is, it's a dangerous job. He grounded one up the middle, I think it was to Aaron Dobson in particular, that nobody could believe he had done. I mean, I think you or I could have thrown the ball at least that well and maybe given Dobson a chance to catch it. But that one stands out amongst a couple of others that he simply has mistargeted. We saw it against the Jets when he overthrew a wide-open Edelman. You know, it could have been a touchdown early in the game in that game as well. So is it right to nitpick and criticize Tom Brady for the misses here?
No, no one's immune to criticism on this roster. You know, they all just, you know, if you don't perform your job at the level you're capable of, Coach Belichick will let you hear it. And on the outside, you know, if there's a throw, like you mentioned, the Dobson, you know, the end zone throw, that's one that Brady makes 99 out of 100 times. And then that same week three game, there was a play where both Kembrell Tompkins and Julian Edelman were streaking down the post, and neither one of them was within 10 yards of a Bucs safety. Each one of them could have scored a touchdown walking in backwards. And Brady missed both of them. Didn't even throw it that way. So, hey, listen, he's left some yards in the field. That's
that got a great, by the way, that play got a huge groan from the crowd.
Yeah.
Because the entire stadium saw it.
Yeah.
And Tom didn't.
Yeah, and it's amazing. And listen, it's much more difficult to see the entire field when you're, you know, being caved in on by 300-pound defensive linemen.
Yeah.
You know, it's easy for us from the sideline or up in the press box to see it. However, Brady would admit that he left that one in the field, and he's done that. And listen, has it been perfect from Brady? No, it hasn't. Has it been very good? Yeah, it's been very good given the circumstances, and you know he's capable of being, you know, exceptional and back to that elite level. You know, I think that was Sunday's best effort. No, but listen, we're in the nitpicking stage of the 3-0 process.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with mentioning where a quarterback normally would make those throws and he didn't.
All right, hang on just a second. Let's see if we can get Dave in Connecticut in here, and then I'll let you give a nitpick yourself. Dave, welcome into the program. You're in the playbook.
Hey guys, good show
so far,
and I just have a couple things that I need to nitpick about.
Go.
You know, I've been watching ESPN most of the day, and I'm hearing like how Miami is a better 3-0 team than the Patriots, and you know, they played tougher opponents. Well, you know, number one, if New England could pick their opponents every week, I think, you know, we would go undefeated for the next 30 years. We play who we play. You know, the schedule's made by the NFL, and your job as a team is to go out and beat the teams that are in front of you. We're 3-0, okay? You know, I think that it's been questionable. You know, I think as a Patriot fan, you get spoiled.
Sure.
You know, because you're used to seeing Brady throw for 400 a game and put up 35.
Well, Dave, listen.
He's done that
the
majority of his career.
You're right. As far as the comparison to a 3-0 Miami, it's apples and oranges. You can't do anything about the teams that you played on the schedule. You can only play the teams that the NFL tells you.
That are put in front of you.
You got to play. And so, you know, the numbskulls at ESPN, sorry, Field, you're not one of them.
Be careful.
Yeah, but the numbskulls, generally, they get up there and try to, you know, fill time on the air.
Oh, absolutely.
They do it for argument's sake. That's all it is. It's a discussion for argument's sake.
Well, Dave, and listen, I think the point here maybe on the 3-0 is I actually don't think that all 3-0s are created equally.
Correct.
You know,
they fail to say that on television.
I would say this. But, well, I think that what they're trying to get at is not that the Patriots are an inferior 3-0 team to the Dolphins, but just that, listen, the Dolphins are legit.
Sure.
All right. Look at the teams they beat.
I think the Dolphins are a lot better than they were last year. But,
sure. Yeah. So let's just give them credit. Let's not make this about the Patriots. Let's make it about the Dolphins.
Here's something that I really, you know, think that we need to stress too. You know, I think we're a little more balanced this year than we have been. If you really want to think about it with the running passing game, okay. Mm. What do we have? The first week against Buffalo, I think we had about 150 on the ground. Something like that?
Yes, correct.
Okay, the Jet game, not so much. And once again, against Tampa Bay, put up, what, another 150?
Yes.
I think, you know, if we can consistently, you know, and offensive line, you know, hasn't played up to par either, if you really think about it. in the beginning of that game, Brady got sacked like three times in the beginning of that game, and then they tightened it up. You know, they really didn't run the ball well against the Jets, you know.
Yeah, I thought they kind of gave up on it against the Jets a little bit, but I think you also have to give the Jets front seven some credit where that's concerned as well.
Yeah, I give them some credit too, but I think, you know, with the running backs we have, you know, we have that stable, and they're all different. Okay, they all bring something different to the table. And I think, you know, that's something that we've strived for as an organization, you know, to have that consistency, to have that balance. I mean, because even when Brady was throwing for, you know, like 400 and where we were running like for 60 yards a game, people were like, oh, we need to get balance.
Sure.
You know, we were blowing teams out, but we didn't have that balance. If you look at Sunday's game, I think it was, you know, and Tom Brady, I'm sure, will be the first to tell you he missed some passes on the field. And like I called last week, and, you know, I said, the younger receivers, you got to give them time. And I think, you know, there was a marked improvement.
Yeah.
You know, it's still a long way to go for these guys. I mean, personally, I'd like to see Boyce on the field. I know he's still banged up. You know, he brings another element to this with the young receiving core. You know, you guys have said it. Hopefully Danny Amendola can come back in a couple weeks. There's another element. You know, Gronk's supposed to be back this week or next week, and that's another element that, you know, we're going to have. But I think we can't get away from the running game. I think we have to. I think we're the most dangerous Patriot team we can be when we have that balance. I think it was 156 and 220 something in the air against Tampa Bay.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what most teams, you know, you want that balance. And, you know, you hear people, you know, bitch and moan about it when we didn't have it, when we were only running for, you know, 2.5 yards of carry on the ground. And our running game was pretty much just to run.
Right, right.
It wasn't really to do much more than that.
Right.
I actually think it might be less balanced this year so far than they've been. Than they were last year. I actually think that the running game has. If I were to nitpick something, it'd probably be the running game. You know, Shane Vereen had a good week one, but look at Stephen Ridley. His yard for carry is way down. And I think that maybe, you know,
after the first week, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, and the fumble in the first week sort of tarred that game a little bit for him. I think that actually this year the running game, there's plenty of room for improvement there. You know, I think that maybe what you're referring to is maybe a few years back, maybe closer to 2007, where the running game was more of an afterthought. But in recent seasons, the Patriots, you know, they had the second most rushing attempts in 2012, sixth most yards. So they were getting done on the ground last year, that's for sure. And the running back core this year, is it that different from last year? You know, you even improved Shane Vereen, and you know, you lost Danny Woodhead, which I think is a critical loss.
Huge loss, yeah.
You know, you have LeGarrette Blount, but I'm not sure the group is better this year than it was last year. But that being said, you know, I think your point about balance being critical to the success of this offense cannot be overstated. You know, people say, well, of course, when you run the ball effectively, you're going to win because that means that you had the ball and you had the lead early in the game, so you bled the clock late in the game. But for the Patriots, it works both ways. They need to run the ball early to get their passing game going. That's something we've seen time and time again. Yes.
And, you know, just final, when I turned you guys on, I heard somebody talking about Mr. Tebow. I just think I just couldn't stand there, and I was just like, wow. I mean,
who's Tebow?
Kudos for this guy that, you know, he's a Tebow maniac. But, you know, I think Belichick said it during the draft, you know, because we had those draft picks and there was a lot of speculation that, you know, hey, the Patriots had all those stockpiled draft picks and, you know, they'd be the one team that would take the shot at Tim Tebow, you know, and they'd be able to turn him into, you know, RoboCop and he'd be, you know, like a universal knife for him,
RoboCop.
You know, and Belichick kind of said it. Why, you know, Tom Brady is one of the greatest quarterbacks in the history of the game. Why would you take him off the field for 10 plays?
Of course, of course. Yeah, I think unfortunately our friend Allen in Georgia really just sort of glosses over that point, but that's okay. It's all right.
Hey, I mean, you know, like I said,
it is what it is.
I mean, I love golden retrievers. He loves Tim Tebow. You know,
yeah. Thanks, Dave. All right, very good. Field, so what did you think? Your overall impressions then from Sunday. I thought you brought up actually a pretty good nitpick that, you know, the running game, while improved at 156 yards in the ground, they did kind of give up on it Tuesday, so it kind of goes back a week. But if you could find something that maybe just, you know, doesn't quite live up to what you thought would be there at this stage of the game in 3 weeks. And you probably look as much, you know, videotape as any reporter that I know of around here as you go back and try to break things down and get a closer look, to look at tendencies, to look at, you know, schemes, so you can understand maybe how they go about doing things. It also helps you ask better questions, I think, when it comes to talking to these guys during the course of the week.
Sure.
Was there a spot that you saw?
You know, I think we're in the deep nitpicking stages here, right? Because, you know, you mentioned some of the things that I would have agreed with as well.
Deep nitpicks, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that just, you know, I'd like to see the running game get established earlier in the game more effectively. You know, I just think that, you know, we look at the numbers from Sunday.
They do have some early three and outs.
So. And that, it just, offensive teams, good ones, can often be rhythmic.
Yeah.
You know, everything, the operation is smooth, it's consistent, and I think that the running game early on in games has struggled some to get going. You know, I think that we saw Brandon Bolden have a big run, and, you know, some of the yardage, that, you know, that total rushing yardage, you know, a lot of that was late in the game where Blunt's chewing up 5-6 yards a carry, and they're up by 20 points. So even if it was 156 in total, maybe your most effective rushing yards were closer to, you know, 95 or 100. So is that a great day, 95 or 100 yards? It's fine, but it's not great. So I think the running game could be better. I think that the offensive line has dealt with some injuries, obviously, Sebastian Vollmer, and they had to move some pieces around with Nate Solder playing some left, you know, some sort of left tight end or tight end as opposed to just left tackle.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think it's still what's most important, I think, also, is that, you know, we're so early in the season that to nitpick too much is just doing it for the sake of doing it, as opposed to having legitimate nitpicks, you know. So, listen, they're 3-0. Big test coming on Sunday night, though.
No doubt. Well, that's why we do what we do.
That's right.
We sit here and we pick them until they bleed.
We have to find ways to talk about the team for multiple hours, right?
No doubt about it.
Yep.
Thanks for coming by, bud.
You bet.
Appreciate
Thanks for having
it.
Me on.
Field Yates, ESPNBoston.com. Make sure you read his stuff as he covers the team pretty thoroughly during the course of the week. All right, I'm going to get a timeout in here. The cards and letters are in, kids. Tons of them. Not only about whether you're a Welker or Amendola guy, but about our friend Big Al. Oh, my goodness. You're not going to want to miss this. Coming up in the playbook.
The word off-season doesn't exist in the NFL. Maybe for hot dog vendors and groundskeepers, but not for teams or players or fans. When the goal every year is winning it all, the road begins to be paved in February. Because there are holes that need to be filled, weights that need to be lifted, and next levels that need to be reached. Keep up with your favorite team with coverage of NFL Network 24/7 on NFL Mobile. Always having your passions with you? That's powerful. Call Star NFL to download NFL Mobile from Verizon. Airtime and messaging rates may apply. Coverage not available everywhere. Available on select smartphones. Don't call or text while driving.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team. From Foxborough all the way to Miami, Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets. With free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or across the street from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place, Ace Ticket is Boston's own ticket agency. We've been serving our customers for over 30 years. Ace always has the best seats at the lowest prices. Whether it's sports, concert, or theater tickets, Ace makes it easy to get the tickets you want and the service you deserve. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS and get the lowest price on the best tickets for all Boston sports teams. And with our free loyalty program, you get 5% back on all orders. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. Ace Ticket. Sit your ace down.
1-800-MY-SEATS. 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium.
Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Story Time every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop. Dine. Enjoy.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time, 2% cash back on groceries, and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
You know that celebration dance? The I just got a heck of a deal on awesome entertainment, so let's dance dance? You probably haven't done it in a while, so here's a reason to. Now until September 3rd, when you sign up for 100% fiber optic Verizon Fios, you can take your entertainment to the next level with America's fastest, most reliable internet. Switch to a Fios triple play online for just $79.99 a month for 12 months and get your choice of a $300 Amazon.com gift card or a $300 Visa prepaid card with a 2-year agreement. Plus, get a high-speed wireless router at no additional charge. You won't get that with cable. And that's an entertainment deal worth dancing about. So hurry. This great summer deal ends September 3rd. Visit gottogetfios.com and upgrade today. Technology that makes life more entertaining. That's powerful. Price is $89.99 a month for months 13 to 24. Rate may increase after 2 years. Verizon Visa prepaid card issued by MetaBank, member FDIC. Amazon.com is not a sponsor of this promotion. Restrictions apply. Fios available in select areas. Offer for new customers subscribing to a triple play bundle online with a 2-year agreement and ends 9/3/13. Taxes, fees, RSN fee, and other terms apply. Visit Verizon.com/Amazon for details.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected. The Patriots Pro Shop has everything you need to show your pride on game day and every day. Choose from the widest selection of hats, tees, authentic jerseys, autographed memorabilia, and much more, including our new game-worn gear collection, where you can own a piece of authentic Patriots history. The Patriots Pro Shop, located next to Gillette Stadium, is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., or shop online 24/7 at PatriotsProShop.com. The Patriots Pro Shop, your team, your store.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team from Foxborough all the way to Miami. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets. With free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or across the street from the Boston Garden or game day pickup at Patriot Place. Ace Ticket is Boston's own ticket agency. We've been serving our customers for over 30 years. Ace always has the best seats at the lowest prices. Whether it's sports, concert, or theater tickets, Ace makes it easy to get the tickets you want and the service you deserve. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS and get the lowest price on the best tickets for all Boston sports teams. And with our free loyalty program, you get 5% back on all orders. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. Ace Ticket. Sit your ace down. 1-800-MY-SEATS.
1-800-MY-SEATS. Now is your chance to hit up John Rook inside the Patriots playbook on the Ace Ticket Hotline. Call 508-298-0398. That's 508-298-0398. Now, back to your host, John Rook.
And a toll-free addition to that number this year, anywhere you're listening to us on this planet, 855-PATS-3 1-800-500 toll-free line. If you're calling from outside the continental U.S., the North American continent, just go to the homepage right here, patriots.com radio, and you'll see all the country codes, all the specific numbers for your continent, wherever you are listening to us. Love that addition this year. Just talking about the running game with Field Yates, and one of the superlatives from this past week that you might have missed, 156 rushing yards on 33 carries. That's 4.7 per carry for the Patriots against Tampa Bay. Second time in three games, the Patriots have broken the 150 rushing yard mark, which is kind of a benchwater mark for being good or maybe really good, even great in any particular week. There was 158 rushing yards in the first weekend against Buffalo. So that's two out of three. But it came against Tampa Bay this week, and the Bucs last year, their defense, as many of you are aware, number one in the NFL in rushing yards allowed at only 82.5 per game, and the Patriots darn near doubled that. So a decent effort, but Field kind of felt like, well, maybe something's been left out on the field a little bit. In other words, that there could be more to it, that there's more potential inside the run game. And I happen to agree. I think that there is more to it. I got a ton of emails and stuff to get to. I'm going to kind of get through them as best as I can here. And also keep on the telephone as well as 855-PATS-500. I'll get back to that in just a moment. This one comes from Matt in Germany, who's listening to us overseas. He says, guys, the interception thrown by Brady was on a third and goal on the Tampa Bay 6. It wasn't first and goal inside the 10, but Brady had two incomplete passes on first and goal inside the 10. And then he says, my nitpick is the unusual overseen wide-open receivers by Brady on two plays, which would be the touchdowns, and then Tlaib had a little luck with some drops by the receivers he covered. That's very true.
That's the point I was trying to make, though.
I think he was.
Yeah, so the possession start, or that series started first and goal inside the 10. There were two incompletions, and then the third pass was a pick.
Was the pick.
So Al's trying to say that when they get a new set of downs inside the 10, that's when Brady struggles. So Al was right.
Mm-hmm. Wow! Wait a second.
On that possession.
Oh, okay. On that possession. All right.
You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, because you know you don't want to be very careful with your words now, Kevin.
No, but what he was trying to say, like the pick came on third.
I understand,
but the series of downs.
The series of downs started on first down, and that's where he feels Brady's
and that's
biggest
the point. He was
yes,
trying to make.
That Brady has some problems when he starts a series inside the 10.
Yeah, that's all I was trying to say.
Dave in Millis, Mass. Here's my nitpick: Ryan Wendell. I would say 80% of his snaps were way too low. Some of them TB had to practically scoop off the turf. This has been a problem for all three games. So far, it hasn't been too costly, but if it isn't cleared up, it will. I'll have to watch that a little bit more carefully this next week, Dave. I honestly did not really notice that, but now that you've written it, I'm gonna try to make notice of it, and let's see if Ryan Wendell picks it up, so to speak. Has anybody else noticed that? William writes us from Okazaki, Japan. John, please stop letting Big Al talk about Tebow. He used to be a great caller, but he's biased on the issue. Take Sunday's game when Tom produced a touchdown on second and goal and an interception as well. It was also the first interception with goal to go at home in three seasons. So expecting it to happen weekly is pathological. I thought it was the first time in a while. Was it really the first time in three seasons with a first and goal to go at home that he actually threw a pick? You might be right, William. Robin in Alaska. Big Al seems to be the type of guy who in the past saw evidence of dinosaur bones and then proclaimed it to be dragons. Perhaps a valid assumption at the time. However, Big Al also seems to be the guy that would still insist that during an all-expenses-paid vacation to Jurassic Park, one thing does not always equal another, even when visually things look like they relate. Tim Tebow isn't in the NFL, let alone the Patriots. If he's so great in any situation, he'd be on somebody's team. Tom Brady's one of the best all-time quarterbacks in any situation. Todd simply sends in from Canada, Al with a drunk phone call. Donovan in Ottawa, Ontario. Guys, love the show as always. My issue's Ridley. Has anyone else not noticed that he's turned into another Lawrence Maroney? Ooh. Ow. I mean, he already has ball control problems. He also has a habit of getting the hand off and stutter-stepping at the line or just stops dead at the line. He seems to wait for this huge hole to open, which, of course, doesn't happen. I also noticed on Sunday he started to spin around like a top at the line of scrimmage. What happened to hitting the hole with the power and speed? It makes me way too nervous to see him get any hand off, and I feel way more confident in Bolden and his straightforward hitting-the-line-hard approach at this point. Well, it might be part of the reason why we did see Bolden get some carries. But I will tell you that, you know, there's no comparison between, you know, Ridley and Maroney. Did Lawrence Maroney have a 1,000-yard season? I think was it his first one? I'm not ready to go that route just yet. Let's wait and see. But, okay, Donovan, as long as you're nitpicking, you can nitpick. Nathan says, if Al continues to talk about Brady and first and goal inside the 10 and Tebow, I'm going to put my bleep through a cheese grater. could I say that bleep word, Kevin? No, I didn't think so. Yeah, that's what I thought. Here we go. Clay says, John, tell me if I'm wrong, but I cannot remember Brady just locking in on one receiver and not looking for the open guy. Tompkins and Thompson wide open with it, not a soul, within 15 yards of each, and he forces it incomplete to the only guy that was well covered. Yeah, we did kind of touch on that. It seems he looks in one direction, doesn't look any other. I remember a quote from Tom, my favorite receiver is the one that's open, just not the guy I remember 5 years ago. Am I wrong? No. Unfortunately, Clay, you're not wrong, and that is certainly a legitimate nitpick of Tom Brady at this stage. Mark says, yes, the defense has improved, but we still have a problem stopping the deep pass. Pats are better in the secondary, but the team still needs to improve. And is it just me, or were we giving up more runs up the middle against the Bucks? I think some of that you have to give credit to Doug Martin. You know, he's 5'9". He's really, I mean, he looks shorter than that. He's got great burst. Great leg drive, solid quickness. I mean, he's tough to handle. He's really tough to handle. He's made in that Ray Rice mold, you know, from Baltimore. I think that he's just a tough guy to bring down, and some of that I think you just got to give him the credit for. Mark says, regarding Welker, he has no problem with the Broncos. This still bothers me. The fact that we not only lost Welker, but letting him go to our arch rival? He says, no question here. Welker all the way. All right, I did ask you to, you know, in a best-case scenario, perfect world, who do you choose, Welker or Amendola, in that role for your team? That's the first for Welker, other than my vote for Welker. And it's not an anti-Amendola, but frankly, until I see more, I can't really go any other direction. I haven't seen enough. Guy's hurt. All right, let me get to some Facebook posts here. Michael sends this in. He goes, by the way, I got half the score. Pats got 23, but the Bucks did not get the 13 score prediction. By the way, nobody got the yearbook again this week. Not a huge surprise. With a score of 23-3, nobody predicted 23-3. But we'll try again this week, kids. Nitpicky says, too many stalled drives. Go ahead, blame Tom, blame the receivers. But this is what you usually say. This is a work in progress. This issue does need to develop if the team hopes to beat the upcoming teams that are playing well, like Miami, New Orleans, and Denver. With respect to the tight ends, this has been an issue since week one when there were no targets to them. Use them if you want teams to respect them. He says, sorry, I'm not entering the Welker Amendola issue. I'm a Patriots fan, and as you say, we follow the laundry of the team we like. That's a good point. And then finally, so a team puts Tebow in the game day roster of 45 players for a few plays during the game, that leaves 44 other actives. Where is the depth elsewhere when you consider you might not want him as the full-time backup quarterback if Brady gets hurt? And I think that's part of the point that reasonable people will try to explain that Al's just not going to buy. But it is what it is. Robert says, John, my first nitpick is that you still let Al voice his opinion pertaining to Patriots football. So my nitpick regarding the game this weekend pertains to Bolden's play on the field. He's got the talent, but doesn't seem to make good decisions, i.e. stopping his route along the sideline early in the game, and that pass route that he kind of gave up on, yes. And then late in the game, not following his blockers downfield on the screenplay. Overall, the offense isn't as bad as they've seemed. I like the upside of the defense. Oh, and I take Amendola's skill set, but I miss Welker's durability. Yeah, I think, Robert, you kind of hit the nail on the head as far as the whole Welker-Amendola issue. Yeah, miss the durability, but the skill set perhaps seems to be in Amendola's favor, especially since I did see Welker drop another one last night. Tim says on Facebook, my nitpick is Big Al. Laugh out loud. I think he needs to clean the rust from his brew kettle. Pull Tom off the field inside the 10 because he can't be trusted? That's one of the best I've heard in ages. I have the odd nitpick, but I can't top that. I'm out. Thank you, Tim. That's actually fair. That's fair. That's fair. All right, Brian in Brighton, thanks for calling in. You're inside the playbook.
Hey, Rook, those emails just kind of took the first thing. I want to nitpick your nit.
Okay, go.
So, first of all, I mean, it's clear what Big Al's opinion is, and let's move on.
Okay.
Like,
yeah.
Don't bring it up with him again.
Well, you know what? Okay, that's fair, but I wanted to bring it up and for one simple reason, that, you know, he, you know, made such a vehement argument about it last week, and I said, all right, let's wait and see what happens this week. And I thought that certainly, you know, with a 23-3 win, looking at it from a team perspective, that it would have been pretty hard to argue otherwise. But no, he's kind of dug his heels in. So now that I know specifically where he's standing, I don't doubt that I will not bring that up again, unless, of course, we have another first and 10 inside, you know, first and goal, and Brady throws another pick, then you can pretty much guarantee it's going to come up again.
Well, on behalf of Radio Land, I don't mean to bash Big Al. I mean, your opinion's your opinion. I mean, whatever. But, I mean, on behalf of Radio Land, we get it. First and goal inside the 10. Not inside the 20, inside the 10. We get it.
Okay.
We got the point.
Got it.
That's his argument.
Yes, sir. That is correct. That's his argument.
That's his argument. We get it. It's there. You don't need to apologize for it. Just let's move on.
Okay.
Now, the other nit I wanted to nitpick, though, is your nitpick of involving the tight end.
Okay.
And I think it's actually the opposite. I feel like they're forcing the involvement of the tight end. And I have two examples as to why. The interception in the end zone was clearly a forced ball into Sudfeld. I mean, he was covered. He was double covered. And the second one was the complete blown throw by Brady when he had when they did the play action and the defense totally bit on it. Mm-hmm. And he had two wide open receivers waving that they were open for the end zone. And he threw it to Sudfeld for an incomplete pass.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like the issue is, there's too much of an emphasis to try to involve Sudfeld in the tight end. And Brady should do a better job of finding the open receiver.
Well, I won't argue that point. I would agree with you in that instance. But I would say, you know, that you kind of helped me make my own point there, and the fact that he most likely was looking at the tight end receiver thinking, I got to spread this thing around. So, because of that, he forced it in someplace that he probably should not have forced it into on those particular instances. And I think
I buy that on the touchdown, on the interception in the end.
Yep.
But not on that play.
Okay.
Not on the other play.
Okay.
I mean, that was they were wide open. I didn't even need to see the replay. Even live, I could see it. I was like, oh my God, they're wide open.
Yeah.
And yet he still throws it to the left sideline to try to get it into Sutton.
Yeah, and that was a mistake. That was a mistake.
It was a huge mistake.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. I feel like, okay, involve the tight ends, but if they're open, mm-hmm. Don't force it in there just because you need to get the ball.
Sure.
To other people.
Sure.
You know?
Yep.
I mean, if you're going to throw it to Welker all day, and that's the other part I wanted to say. Welker all day, every day, any day, over Amendola. And
yep.
That, as far as I'm concerned, our point is proven. I mean, who knows if Amendola, the reports I hear on Amendola, I don't even know if we're going to see him again this year.
Well, I hope that that's not the case. I'm sure Patriots fans share that sentiment. They hope it's not the case, but frankly.
It's not what I'm wishing for.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, that's what it's coming down to, is that the guy is like, every report comes out, and it sounds like it's a worse injury than you thought.
Yeah.
And yet, I mean, that was what Welker was. Welker was a beast.
He simply was durable to the point where that you could count on him. And we don't know Danny Amendola well enough to know whether or not we can really count on him or his durability. Now, again, I'm going to stress one more time, he practiced last week. If he was really seriously hurt, there's no way in God's green earth that he would have been out there doing anything of a physical nature, which tells me that he's got to be closer than we're being led to believe. That's all I'm saying here. So I'm hopeful that's the case.
I'm hoping that's right, too. But, again, it's still regardless of what that, I mean, we've played three games and he's missed two, and you could even say two and a half.
Yep.
He was out for a while in that first game.
But he did suck it up and come back in the first game, which showed me something. But now I think we need to see the next step. And that, and like I've said earlier, until we are told or something is said otherwise, I don't see an ability to play with pain or discomfort. It's one thing to be able to play through an injury. It's another thing entirely to play hurt. I don't think we're seeing him play hurt. If he's injured, that's fine. But if he's injured, then why the hell was he practicing last week? That's my question.
And you'll never get an answer to that.
No, we won't. You know too well already. We will not get that answer. So,
but regardless, I mean, my point is just like, I mean, I'll take the Belichick stance that, you know, it is what it is. He didn't play.
Yes.
And that's all that matters.
Right.
He didn't play during the game.
Right.
And that's, I don't care if he missed every practice. It's Sunday that matters. And that's it.
Yep, that's correct.
Or Thursday.
Yeah, that's correct. You're right.
So that's it. I mean, if you're there, you're there. If you're not, you're not. And that's it.
And pretty much it's kind of like, you know, and shame on you for asking the question. But, you know,
sometimes it's just fact.
We have to. Okay, Brian.
All right, thanks, Rook.
Hey, thank you. Appreciate the phone call. Here's Jason in Florida. Jason, you're in the playbook.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, man.
I have two questions for you. My first question is, do you think it was a mistake to let Fields go, and we had a Hurtin' Rob and a Hurtin' Rob Gronkowski. Do you think that was a good move to let an experienced tight end like that get away from him?
Well, when you put it that way in terms of experience, I would say no. But at the same time, I feel like the Patriots felt that the guys that they were keeping were more than adequate to do the job. So in hindsight, I'd have to say the jury's still out because we really haven't seen, other than Hooman this last week, you know, stepped up big on a 3rd and 19 play. We really haven't seen Zach Sudfeld do anything. And so if you're telling me, well, all right, so you're going to sign Fells to a veteran deal or Sudfeld to a rookie free agent deal, well, they're going to play him to a, you know, pay him a minimum salary, then I think you can understand why they made the move they did.
Yeah, but I was thinking with an inexperienced wide receiver corps. And we have an offense that's been telling around our tight ends for the last 3 years. You know, David Fells probably would have came in and contributed right away.
Well, he could have. And frankly, I'm a little surprised that they decided to keep him. But again, I'm pretty sure that this came down to a money issue and an upside issue. Fact is that here's a free agent rookie who, you know, hey, if he doesn't make it, well, then guess what? We're going to cut him loose and we wish him well. And then we can go, we can find someone like a Daniel Fells, or we can find somebody else out there to pick up and take his spot. But right now, he saves us X amount of dollars on the salary cap. And when you consider that the cap took a huge hit this year, and it's going to take a huge hit even next year because of the whole Hernandez situation, I can understand why they make moves for money right now. I do.
Right. But what's the use of making a move for money when our team can't win a championship?
Well, we don't know that yet, though, Jason. That's just it. We don't know the answer to that. And frankly, if Gronkowski is able to come back in the next week or so, and again, we're anticipating, you know, good news this week, but we don't know yet, and we won't start to know until they step back out on the practice field tomorrow, that will be a moot point. And your question will be a moot point, and they won't have to worry about backup tight ends because you got a good one in Hooman, and you've got a rookie who's going to come along and can be brought along at a rookie's pace, and that's Sudfeld.
Okay. My second question is, do you think McDaniel is the offensive coordinator for us? Because to me, I haven't seen anything that warrants him being a so-called savior for our offense. I mean, to me even in our good days with Moss there, I mean, we was good enough to get there, but we wasn't good enough to win.
Mm-hmm. But and so your point being that they won in spite of that, right?
I mean, we have an offense that's geared for winning in the regular season, but championship football, McDaniels hasn't shown me anything with his play calling or his offense. To me, I don't think he's a top five offensive coordinator. I just don't. I think we've won when he's had good seasons. We had the talent. I mean, of course, with Brady, any offensive coordinator would love to have him. But the offensive coordinator before him put in the tight end tight end offense we've been running. But McDaniels, to me, just, I mean, what has he done besides, you know, has he won a championship?
Well, he was a part of 07.
But since then, but I'm asking you, are you happy with his play calling? Are you happy with the offense he's in?
I have to admit that I have questions as to some of the calls. I thought some of the calls were kind of curious, especially what we were talking about early in the program today. You know, the inability to score with a first and goal inside the 10-yard line. And I think that, you know, it's all about the offensive coordinator pretty much when you have a red zone situation, and the red zone numbers have suffered by comparison. That was one of my big nitpicks on the day today. I'm not happy with the red zone offense, and that's got to improve, and some of that you certainly can lay on Josh McDaniel's shoulders, because knowing the personnel you have, knowing the inexperience you have, knowing that you've got a quarterback that's struggling to find some of these young guys, and it may or may not be the case that they're running wrong routes, and some instances they are, you've got to put your team in the best position possible by calling the plays that they can have the best amount of success to a reasonable degree. And I don't know that Josh has done that this year. Last year, I don't have a problem overall with what he called. I really don't. I think he did a more than adequate job, and I think he did a fine job considering the personnel that they had. This year, right, with a different set of personnel and struggling, I'd like to see them, try to play a little bit more to their strength. Part of the reason why I wanted to see them, at least use the tight end position a little bit more efficiently. But I'd also like to see them, emphasize the run a little bit more even than they're doing. And unfortunately, Shane Vereen's absence for the next 6 weeks or so is going to keep them from doing that completely. Otherwise, I think the Patriots could be running all over people. But he can only do what he can do because he's hamstrung a little bit by the lack of some of their go-to guys. That might get better for him, and maybe he calls better plays when he gets Gronk back and when he gets Amendola back.
Okay, well, thanks, man. I appreciate you guys, and go Patriot Nation.
There you go, Jason. Thanks for the phone call. Facebook, here we go. Alan says, John, didn't Brady set some kind of record a few years ago for most consecutive touchdowns without an interception in the red zone? Seems like he did, didn't he? Sure, that was a dig toward Big Al. Paul says, John, how are you? My nitpick would be that we don't know whether or not that was a good result because of how bad Tampa was, particularly Freeman, but in general as well. They left 10 points on the field early with missed field goals and even more badly missed open receivers in the end zone. It's a good win, but I'm not sure it tells us how good the D really is because of how poor the opposition was. You know, Paul, you're the first person to bring that up today. I have talked a little about the defense. Mostly it's been about the offense, but a little about the defense. And quite frankly, no one has mentioned, could it have been that maybe just the Tampa stunk more so than the Patriots played well defensively? And I honestly believe that there was something to that. Tampa was not good. They were bad. They've got some real problems there. They're not our problems, but that's some problems for Greg Schiano and or Josh Freeman to potentially, work out over the course of the next few weeks.
I'm not really into solving the world's problems.
I don't blame you, Bill. We got our own, bag of you-know-what to carry around here. But, yeah, I wouldn't be at all surprised to see a change made there in relatively short order. They misfired on some things that they probably could have taken advantage of. If they were clicking like they probably should have been, or maybe they felt like they could have been, then that was not a 23-3 game. That was probably more like 23-17. And that was a game that went down, or would probably go down, to the final possession. As it was a snooze fest in the fourth quarter because Tampa was so inept offensively. But I'm actually glad you brought that up, Paul, because I kind of share your sentiments there. Nori says, nitpick, the Bucs receivers' ability to get open on our corners. Tlaib, Dennard, Arrington need to do a better job blanketing the receivers because the Falcons receivers are more talented, will likely not drop passes like how the Bucs receivers did. It's also a good point, Nori. That's a good point. I think, between, the Twin Towers at receiver that I like to call them that Atlanta has, they're a little bit more sure-handed. Vincent Jackson, I thought, dropped an unbelievably talented play that there was no way that Aqib Talib could defend. And I actually thought Talib did a pretty good job on him. And, yeah, he got, another pick. And so, he's looking good in that department. But, when you're 6 feet or 5'11 going up against a 6'5 receiver, that's just a physical mismatch. And you've got to do the best you can just to make life tough on him. And I actually thought Tlaib did a good enough job of making life tough. But, yes, Jackson left some out on the field. There's no question. And I thought the kid Williams also left a couple out on the field as well. So you certainly can blame Tampa receivers for part of that. I also believe that, you know, while Tlaib is showing an ability to be a shutdown corner, I wouldn't call him one of the five best in the league, but I'd say he's got to be on the upper half at the very least right now. You know, Dennard started slowly and came on. Arrington actually started slower than he had in the previous 2 weeks, but also came on. So I think they're going to be fine there. But those guys are going to continue to improve as long as the Patriots have what, gang? An effective pass rush in front of them, without a doubt. Let's see, what else do we have? Michael says, last year there were a lot of nitpicks early in the year about play calling on offense. Well, they ended up kind of, you know, working that out, I would say, didn't they? I mean, I'm of the impression that they ended up working it out. I mean, you made the AFC Championship game. You know, you were, you know, a play or two away from being in the Super Bowl again and having a chance again, and I think that's what it really is, it kind of all boils down to. Is Josh McDaniels the be-all to end-all? No. No, but it's hard for me to criticize his play calling here when the gun's got some blanks in it. Brooklyn Matt, belated welcome back, but as you know, we've had a 7-game preseason this time around. that's the best. That's pretty good. 4 preseason games and the first 3 regular season games, because now we're getting ready to turn the corner here. My first nitpick is the short Brady pass to Sudfeld while there were 2 wide-open Patriots far downfield waving their hands. Yep, we've talked about that today. My second nitpick is WTIC in Hartford broadcasting the Giants game. I was in Fairfield County Sunday to watch the game and got screwed. Same thing happened last year with the Cardinals game and again back in 09 for the Falcons. The rule is as follows. When the Patriots are hosting an NFC team, Giants are playing at the same time against an NFC team, WTIC is obligated to the Giants. That's the only scenario that would prevent TIC from showing Patriots, and it's only occurred 3 times in 5 years. Well, okay, I say that's a legitimate nitpick on your part, but your issue is with WTIC and not us. Mike says, can we comment on the fact that people are already crowning the Broncos AFC champs and they beat the Raiders by less than the Pats beat the Bucks? I don't know about you guys, but scoring a ton of points hasn't really worked out in the long run for the Patriots or anyone else. I like this team. Tough D and an offense that is just going to get better and better. Also, Welker doesn't catch the ball unless it's in his stomach and nobody's on him. Okay, Mike, that's actually a couple of good points, to be honest with you. He has had some trouble holding onto the ball and had trouble last night on one that I saw and I saw most of the game last night. And yes, you're right. Scoring a lot of points and, you know, setting the NFL record for points scored in a year, which is certainly something that the Broncos may be challenging the 07 Patriots record in that regard. Didn't win any championships here in New England, did it? We've known for a long time that you've got to have, you know, something at least close to what could be considered a championship-caliber defense in order to be a contender on down the line. Now, it remains to be seen, only 3 weeks into the year, whether or not we're actually there and whether or not Denver might not also develop as much. We don't know how the whole Von Miller thing is going to play out there, but, boy, I can tell you, they are definitely missing him. Brian in Essex, Vermont, I disagree with you on how the Patriots should handle Gronk if he's healthy and ready to come back. I don't think they need to ease him into anything. He can be on the field and still be eased back into the offense while still providing blocking and just making opponents cover him, which quite often ends up having to be double coverage. See, that's the whole point right there. I think you do understand that, Brian. If he's healthy enough, they're going to utilize him to the full extent. I'm not so sure they need to do that because I think he's going to draw some safety help just because of who he is. Just because of who he is. That invariably is already going to help the offense. Howard in Stratford, Connecticut. I'm going to give you the last word here. Nice win against the Bucks, no doubt about it, considering they were both able to run and throw against what everyone was considering a top-rated D. Also, the D holding them to 3 points was impressive, considering in prior years they would have made Freeman look like the second coming of Joe Montana. Nits to pick. Brady, not playing up to his stellar self. Perhaps it's the growing pains with the Wookiees or not having adjusted yet to a tight end less O. Thank you. I had to wait for that one. But knows he isn't playing like the Brady we've all come to know and love. Fox 61 in Hartford showing the Giants game. Ah, there you go, Brooklyn Matt. You got a fellow compatriot there. And then the D for bending and not breaking. This D reminds me of the D around 03 when they would let teams march up and down the field between the 20s, but then hold them to a field goal or make a turnover. All legitimate. But I think this defense has got the ability, based on what I've seen in the first few weeks here, to shut teams down, to make a stop when they need to. Case in point, four fourth down stops made by the Patriots in the game on Sunday. Four of them. I don't know if that's a record or anything. And a lot of it might have been, well, certainly some of it, might have been due to Tampa's ineptitude. But do you remember a time that ever happened when a team goes for it on fourth down four times and you stop them all four times?
Nope.
I mean, the law.
That would be a good Russell question.
That may be a good one for Thursday. I mean, law of averages says they're going to get at least one and probably two, right? They got zero. Give the credit to the defense. If you're going to give it to anybody, give it to the defense. All right, that wraps up our program for today. Thank you for joining us in the playbook this afternoon. Our thanks to Field Yates, ESPNBoston.com, for stopping by the studio to get some of his nitpicks in and to also chat with you about that. We'll do it same patch time, same patch channel tomorrow. We're going to turn the page a little bit and start more on this three-game gauntlet the Patriots are getting ready to run, starting with the Atlanta Falcons in the Georgia Dome this next Sunday night. It'll be the primetime game. The entire country will be watching, as I'm sure you will be as well. We'll start jumping into the Falcons mañana.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
Pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2.